Today's topic may not be suitable for younger viewers. Accordingly, parental supervision is advised. Sex addiction is a vice that affects men and women of all ages and persuasions. As with other addictions, it takes over a person's life and makes them victims to obsession and dysfunction. So how does it happen? And if we're affected, how do we break free? Stand by, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello and welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Sex is a normal part of the human experience, but it has been distorted in so many ways. The media floods our world with sexualized images as if to normalize the abnormal and publicize the private. It takes effort and intention to avoid exposure to provocative images on the internet, TV, magazines, and billboards. It is no wonder that our young people are falling under its spell. Meet John.
So I was first exposed to porn, I'd say around like 11 years old, maybe before that with the, you know, the soft porn from like television stuff. But I realized that I had a, you know, desires in my heart and I didn't know what to do with. And then as I got into television, it's kind of just there, right? And then you learn about the internet and then it kind of starts to just go deeper and deeper and you're just trying to hide it. But then when I started hanging out with new friends and they began to talk about it openly. So I'd be conservative about it, but then I would later, as I became more open about who I was like, well, you know, I'll do more, but I'll be quiet about it. As I was 18, I started to get into the party scene. I started to want to explore things. I left the church in my mind. I was considered myself a postmodern nihilist, which means I didn't really think that there was any purpose in life, that the whole world could just be destroyed. So I was like, what can I do with it in my life? So I'll just live for pleasure. And so I began using drugs. I was a pre-nursing student in college. It was my freshman year. And I started smoking weed, started getting into the party life. And when I mean weed, I mean marijuana. And then that kind of just sent me deeper and deeper into depression because before that I had depression, but I really didn't want to acknowledge it. And then when I just kept feeling sad and more sad, I just got into music, got into more drugs. In fact, right before I came to Weimar, I was starting to, you know, experiment with ecstasy and acid or LSD and cocaine. And so I was just kind of spiraling out of control and I had suicidal ideations. So before I came to Weimar, I was actually using porn daily whenever I would smoke marijuana. So one day at school, like I wasn't really like trying to hide my smoking, but I didn't want to get in trouble. And one morning, the dean, the boys dean said, you know, the dean of discipline wants to see you. And so I was like, oh, that's weird. And so later that afternoon, she called me into her office, was like, oh, like, how's school? And then she's like, one more thing before you go. Someone said that you've been smoking marijuana. They've heard from a reliable source. And I denied it. And they're like, well, we can do a pee test. And so they did that. And I was hoping for that 0.001% chance that'd be negative, but it wasn't.
Later, we'll see if that worked. Hear a lot more about the impact of pornography on the brain. Join Sean for a quick workout and learn how to choose a good oil. So let's get started with the news. In the headlines, is internet dating healthy? No safe level for alcohol? And emotional intelligence delays sex. In the search for a potential date, more and more people are switching to online dating. Is it just for a relationship or for sex? Israeli researchers administered a questionnaire to 280 young adults aged 18 to 38. They were screened for social anxiety, sensation seeking, and sexual addiction. The users of online dating had higher sexual addiction scores than non-users, and those with lower sexual addiction scores also had lower social anxiety scores, which may explain why relationships that start online are more likely to break up than those that start face-to-face. No amount of alcohol is good for overall health. That's according to the most comprehensive study on alcohol and its effects by authors of the Global Burdens of Diseases, Injuries and Risk Factors study, who analysed over 25 years of data from 195 countries. In the past, a number of studies suggested that moderate alcohol intake was good for cardiovascular health, but by applying state-of-the-art statistical methods to measure alcohol-related harm, the authors concluded that alcohol use is a leading risk factor for global disease burden and causes substantial health loss. Overall, the risk of death rises with increasing levels of consumption, and the level of consumption that minimizes health loss is zero. That means moderate consumption is no longer recommended. Sex education in schools may be more effective when the focus is on emotional regulation rather than just relaying information. 400 high-risk 12 to 14-year-olds were randomly assigned to 12 sessions of either emotional regulation training or typical sex education. Emotional regulation was taught in small groups with a focus on regulating emotions in the context of making decisions about sexual behaviours. The health promotion group learned about sexual health and high-risk behaviours. Follow-up was done using questionnaires about sexual behaviour every 6 months for the next 2.5 years. Those with no baseline sexual activity when the study began were less likely to report sexual initiation in the emotional group than the health promotion group. Overall, the emotional regulation group were less likely to have sexual encounters without condoms, they were less likely to use substances before having sex, and were less likely to have multiple sexual partners than the teens in the health promotion group. So build your teens' emotional intelligence and you can help them in every area of their lives. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. Today's guest is Dr. Neil Nedlead. He's a favourite with our viewers because he is so knowledgeable about the brain and the steps needed to fix a broken brain while making a good brain better. Each year he organises the EQ Summit, and we went to interview him there. I asked him if he could explain why it is that we crave novelty and how this can lead us astray.
Yeah, it's called the Coolidge effect, and it is the automatic response to novel mates. So, you know, when you put a rat in a cage, male rat in a cage with a female rat, and it's first introduced, there's a flurry of activity. And the sexual activity results. And if you keep furnishing that male with novel females, he will continue with his original zest until he's completely wiped out. But if it's the same female, he will not have that libido aspect of things. And will actually, after the sexual act, will not be interested for, you know, days. But introduce a novel female, and all of a sudden the interest goes way up.
So what's happening there in the brain? Presumably, well, and the brain is said to be the most important organ for sex, right? So what's happening there?
Well, it's about dopamine.
All right.
And there are five natural things that that help us to seek out things. Dopamine is kind of the seeking neurochemical. It gives us interest and that sort of thing. But
what are those five things?
Food.
Food. Oh yeah.
And of course.
Right. We all know about that one. Yeah. So dopamine is that primary driver for seeking food.
That's right. Yeah. And of course, the different foods, different amounts of dopamine. You know, chocolate cake and ice cream, a big blast. Celery, not so much.
So it's a circuit that it drives us to seek food, and if it's a particular food, you get feedback and more dopamine.
That's right. Okay. Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's lower brain function. It's more of the limbic system type of function that's going on. And of course, as humans, we want our frontal lobe, even though the limbic system says go for it, we want our frontal lobe to say, not wise, not going to do that.
So there's this balance happening.
That's
so
right.
There's hopefully your higher nature will take over your lower nature and make the choices wisely.
Yes, yes, exactly. So there's food. There is friendship. There's love. Is something that produces a dopamine boost.
And then you've just mentioned the other two, probably, sex and novelty.
That's right. Sex and novelty are the other two. And novelty is learning something new. And of course, that's important for us because we want to be able to continue to learn throughout life. If we don't, we actually have more neurodegeneration. But what happens is when we start mixing these things up, you know, when you have sex and novelty combined, that's what sets up the whole porn addiction pathway. And it sets us up for some very adverse brain changes. So we really need to have novelty there apart from sex, because as the studies show, if you're exclusive in a sexual relationship in regards to stimulation and all of that, there's much more healthy brain in that situation. And so exclusivity is not really part of novelty, and that's why the frontal lobe was meant to help us with this whole thing and say, no, no novelty here.
More from Dr. Natalie in the next segment, but first this.
I had a couple of questions. What's the soup of the day, please?
Creamy tomato soup.
And the pasta of the day?
Macaroni cheese.
All right, I'm not quite ready, but if you take his order, I'll be ready.
I'll have the number 26, please.
Sure. Would you like that mild, medium, or hot?
However it comes, doesn't matter.
Can I please have the green salad with dressing on the side? And if the chef is able to do eggplant parmesan without the cheese, that would be really good. And can I have green beans without butter, please?
Certainly, ma'am.
Thank you.
Boy, you're quite a fusspot, aren't you?
Well, if I go to the trouble of eating healthfully at home, I want to eat healthfully when I'm out as well.
Well, why not just spoil yourself and indulge a little bit and enjoy it?
The problem is the average restaurant meal has 2,000 calories, and that's without drinks and desserts. If I do that, I'll leave here feeling ill, bloated, and guilty.
I suppose you're right, because I do toss and turn at night after I've had a lot of fat and cheese and spicy meal.
So why did you tell the waitress you didn't mind if it was mild, medium, or hot? It might come hot, and you don't like hot.
Oh, you're right. It's going to burn from the beginning to the end, isn't it?
Well, I guess that will make the memory of this meal last longer. Become your own menu mafia. Be polite and assertive. Sleep well at night. Doctor's orders.
Percent of the calories in our food come from fats, and those fats are made up of either monounsaturated fatty acids, polyunsaturated fatty acids, or saturated fatty acids. So I want to talk about saturated fats today. You know, they have some seriously harmful effects on our body, these saturated fats. For one, insulin resistance. That will increase the risk of diabetes. Secondly, they cause increase in oxidation, which basically will speed up the aging process. Then they're pro-inflammatory, and we all know the feeling of being inflamed. There's that pain, but also tissue breakdown. Something else they do is what we call lipotoxicity. They put fat down in places where there shouldn't be fat. For example, in our muscles, and that will block insulin signaling and again increase the risk of diabetes. Also, fat gets laid down in the liver, and that's non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, makes for a sick liver. Not good if you want to live long and healthy lives. It also alters gut microbes and enables them to carry toxins from meat into the body, and that triggers atherosclerosis. Then they also alter the way that our genes are expressed. They can turn our gene switches one way or the other. That will suppress mitochondrial enzymes. The fat-burning enzyme, for example, CPT1A, is 60% higher in vegetarians because they get that much less saturated fat in their diet. And what that does with the mitochondria, it reduces our oxidative capacity, and they don't work so well. They're actually our powerhouses in our cells. And so we're not going to have as much energy. We're going to feel sluggish and just not good. Then saturated fat contributes to disease progression. So not just looking at cellular level, we now get chronic inflammation, autoimmune disease, allergies, cancer. We mentioned atherosclerosis, but then also high blood pressure, cardiac hypertrophy, and other metabolic and degenerative diseases. And then it also raises the cholesterol. Now, reducing saturated fats is a major focus of effort by many dietary recommendations from organizations around the world in order to prevent these chronic diseases, which cost countries so much and cause so much suffering. So the WHO, the American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, the USDA, Institute of Medicine, they all encourage less than 10% of our calories to be from saturated fats. Other organizations say get it as low as possible. And now many of them are actually saying even get under 7%. That's just 20 grams, not even 1 ounce of saturated fat per day. So where are we getting all this saturated fat? Well, this is where we get it. Animal products primarily. So dairy, milk, cottage cheese, butter, yogurt, ice cream, all of those things. And actually, in America, cheese is the primary source of saturated fats. But then eggs will have it, and meat. And when I say meat, I mean anything with a face or a mother. So beef, pork, turkey, chicken, fish, they all have saturated fat. And I think that's why the Bible advised against eating animal fat, because you trim off a lot of that saturated fat when you trim your meat. Now, there are certain plants which also have saturated fat, and therefore they should be used with caution. Look at this chart. You can see that avocado oil and olive oil, to a lesser extent canola oil, are primarily monounsaturated in their fat source. Flaxseed and vegetable oils primarily are polyunsaturated, but if you look at the flaxseed, you can see most of that is omega-3 type polyunsaturated fat, and we know that's good for the heart. Finally, 50% of the fat in palm oil is saturated and 92% in coconut oil. So why on earth is coconut oil touted to be healthy? I'll answer that in our next episode. Today's show deals with sex addiction, and the sensitive topic may not be suitable for younger audiences. John was exposed to pornography at the age of 11, and it began to invade his life. By 18, his life was one of simply chasing pleasure, partying, drugs, and porn. He was caught using cannabis, and during the intervention, he was found to have depression. Fortunately, his parents asked him to attend the Nedley Depression Recovery Program at Weimar Institute, and eventually he agreed. Here's what happened next.
So I get to Weimar. And at Weimar, one of the first things we do is we talk to Dr. Nedley. And so speaking with Dr. Nedley, he asked me some questions. He asked me about my drug use. He asked me about like my sexual life, including pornography. And so like I began to share, because I'm an open person. So I told him how I was engaging in these different activities. And to my surprise, I didn't actually think that pornography was that big of a deal. So I was really surprised when he told me that pornography was actually damaging my mind rather than actually helping me or like as any release or anything. So Dr. Nedley told me that I should engage in a 90-day reboot with no porn, no masturbation, and no orgasm, which is like no PMO. I was confused, like, but I was just willing to try anything at this point, at least in this 10-day program, because I came here agreeing not to do any drugs, not to smoke weed or drink any alcohol, or just do whatever they told me just to see if they had the answer. And so I was like, okay. And then when I saw the science behind it and how other people had overcome as well, I was like, okay, I'll try it. So before going to Ned Lee's depression recovery program, I was considered myself agnostic because I couldn't sense him with any of my five senses. So I was like, okay, I'm postmodern, nihilistic, agnostic. But now that I'm coming into the program and I had nowhere else to go and I couldn't explain the suffering in the world, I just tried what I'd heard one of my friends try one time, is open my Bible. But the Bible didn't speak to me when I opened it. So that led me to pray and ask God who I could relate to in the Bible. And in that lecture in the depression recovery program later that day, one of the people that Dr. Ned Lee summarized his points within that lecture was King Solomon. And that's when I was like, whoa, there's somebody in the Bible that I can relate to. Somebody who was addicted to drugs, alcoholic, was addicted to porn. It was a little different. They didn't have computers back then. And was nihilistic, was depressed at times, had suicidal thoughts. I was like, this is somebody that I can relate to, but has a hopeful story at the end. And so I was like, okay, this is an answer to prayer.
A powerful moment when God spoke through that story into John's life. Before the break, Dr. Ned Lee was explaining how life's simple pleasures stimulate a burst of dopamine in the brain. I asked him if it's possible to get super stimulation of the dopamine reward circuit.
Oh, yes, there absolutely is, and there's multiple ways to do it. But one of the ways that will produce this super stimulation is if we're having sexual activity too frequently. There's a cycle of sex, so when you start doing it more than every 4 days, you are setting yourself up for 3 adverse brain changes in.
Really? What are they?
Those are what we call hypersensitivity, and so you become more sensitive, anxiety goes up, and then you also have decreased pleasure. And so your pleasure for things goes down, and you actually no longer have interest in things that you used to be interested in. And then on top of that, you have hypofrontality, so the frontal lobe actually shrinks so that the limbic system can much more easily override the frontal lobe.
Now, you mentioned a drop in interest in things. Does that include a drop in interest in sex, or does that still override everything?
It should. There actually should be a decreased libido stage after normal sex. But what happens with these individuals is they're seeking novel sex. And so if it's the same partner, they try to fool the brain by different outfits or different things like that, that there's a novel partner entering. And that novelty sets them up for those 3 adverse brain changes because they're more likely to do it much more frequently.
And how long do the adverse brain changes last? Is it a temporary thing, or is that kind of set until you take action to deal with this?
Well, it's set until you take the right action. And if you are into the hypersexual mode, and of course there's more ways than just doing it too frequently, there's, having to go outside the usual act to get stimulation. So there are people that no longer can climax or have this in the usual way. And so there has to be some sort of hyperstimulation things. And that's where we get into all these sexual deviancy disorders that all started as a result of the Coolidge effect and not being wise in regards to sexual activity.
So going back to the Coolidge effect, if you've got this exhausted male rat, had multiple partners, mm-hmm. and then what happens to that hormone, the hormone levels, the neurotransmitter levels in the brain and the body?
Testosterone goes down. So the testosterone will significantly go down. And of course, today you see all these low T level commercials. Those low T level commercials are saying is if you'd quit overdoing it, you wouldn't need to have testosterone shots.
But in the meantime, buy our testosterone. Right, because
that's
you're
right.
Seeing testosterone.
Shoot yourself up with testosterone, which is going to make anxiety even worse. So these people with hypersexuality, they have higher amounts of anxiety. The usual nuisances of life will tick them off. And now you're shooting testosterone, which is going to increase anxiety levels even more. And that's why these guys end up, you know, beating up their you know, partners and ending up in prison and jail and all of these type of things. It all started as a result of unwise sex. The whole pathway up.
So testosterone is falling. Any other hormones or?
Yes, androgen receptors will go down. So even the receptors that bind on to testosterone will go down. And estrogen goes up.
This is not good news for men. A drop in testosterone and a rise in female hormones.
That's right. They
estrogen.
Actually become more feminine. More feminine characteristics will be developed as a result.
Wow. And then is there any effect on, like, the endorphins in our system or?
There is. Yeah, there's multiple effects. They're all pretty adverse in regards to hypersexuality. So you'll have less endorphin release. Now, you will have, the more you do it, you're trying to get an increased opioid effect. And the opioid effect is there to try to help the person to say, quit overdoing it. You know, relax. And the opioid is a pleasure chemical, so they're getting some pleasure, not near as much as they used to, because when they first did it, there was a kind of a euphoric high with the dopamine. But the more they do it, the less high they get. Their dopamine receptors even go down. Dopamine and dopamine D2 receptors go down. So pretty soon they're doing it just to get numb, to get their dopamine levels to even exist, because in between times, apathy sets in and all of these other adverse effects.
Wow. So this really impacts life across the board.
It's
going to affect work performance, relationships.
Yeah. And it's one of the problems where our society, even in the scientific realm, when they haven't looked at all these effects, has put people astray and actually led them into this by this whole teaching that masturbation is sometimes healthy for people. It actually is unhealthy, and it leads to even doing it even more. And so this porno masturbation thing that's become at an all-time high in our society today is producing the lowest levels of emotional intelligence and the ability to manage your emotions. It's lowering IQ levels because testosterone is there for creativity and IQ. It's lowering interest levels, and it's one of the reasons why 60% of our young people today, according to Harvard University, have a mental disorder. It's not due to the genes becoming more prevalent. It's because of activities like this that lead to mental disorders.
That close connection between the body and the mind. We heard how Solomon's story brought God close to John, so let's spend a minute exploring that story ourselves. King Solomon was said to be the wisest man that ever lived, and perhaps he was also the wealthiest. At his coronation, God offered anything he wanted, and he chose wisdom to rule well. With wisdom came everything else, including wealth. But there was one area of his life where he applied the wealth, but unfortunately not the wisdom. 1 Kings 11 tells us that Solomon loved many foreign women. In Ecclesiastes 2, he wrote, "Whatever my eyes desired, I did not withhold. I just chased basically every pleasure." Now, the pursuit of pleasure is not necessarily something that needs to take us down as it did Solomon. Mind you, he had 700 wives and 300 concubines, so it's no wonder he lost his way. This character weakness cost him his just really dearly, personally and professionally. You know, his kingdom was divided and 10 tribes broke away. A sad ending to a brilliant beginning. God created all of us with the capacity to experience pleasure. Pleasure that brings freedom rather than pleasure that ends in bondage. So choose your pleasures wisely.
As we
build our muscles, we stress our bones and we make them stronger. So if you have osteoporosis, reverse it with the kind of strength training that Sean's about to show us. So what are we going to stress our bones with today?
Well, we're going to stress our bones in a fun way, okay? Exercise should be challenging, but it should also be fun, okay? So in all the workouts that we do, you choose some heavy weights, you choose some light weights, you vary it up. But today we're going to use a stability ball and a small little ball to have a little bit of fun, okay? Now you can vary this up, as I said, grab a heavier ball if you want, just to make it as more challenging, but always listen to your body. If sometimes you may not feel like going heavy, go a little bit lighter, you can still challenge yourself, okay?
All right.
Now, in order for us to get warmed up, we're gonna start with some squats because we're gonna do some lateral movements today, okay? This is a goblet squat, all right, where your toes are pointed out, no weight in hand, and just getting us warmed up, all right? So we're just gonna go down, but the pace is a little bit faster, okay? So go down, up. Down, up. Your goal here is to get the blood pumping, get your legs going, because we're going left to right today using that stability ball. You may be asking how. Well, I'll show you in a few, all right?
Uh-huh.
In 3, 2, and 1. Shake out those legs. Should be nice and warm. All right, we're gonna grab, we have a 6-pound ball here. All right, at certain gyms, you may find a 10, 20, 30-pound ball or sandbag. Sandbags are really in a lot of gyms these days,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah, they are.
The goal for this is a heart-pounding exercise. This is called a slam. If you've done it before, it's fun. You pick up the weight as high as you can above the head and slam it down, okay?
Ready?
All the way down. I'm ready. There you go. Now slam it like you really mean it. There you go. There you go. Let it all the way out. This is a great way, a stress reliever.
Yeah.
A great total body exercise that you can do for about 30 seconds to 45 seconds, all right?
So I'm weightlifting.
You're weightlifting.
And then I'm...
And you are slamming, oh. Right? There you go. Now, one thing you could do is mark a spot on the gym floor or wherever you are that you can aim for every single time. Sandbags are a little bit more cooperative.
Yeah, they
this
are.
This one is a little bit more troublesome, right? But the goal here is find that spot, set your timer, and you'll be surprised. 30 seconds goes by relatively fast when you're doing something different from the norm.
Yeah.
There you go. You see your heart rate is up. There you go. All right. So that is a sandbag or a heavy medicine ball that has sand in it. Slam.
Right.
Okay. Great cardiovascular exercise.
Yep.
Number two, using a stability ball. We've used it before for core exercises, just making stable exercises unstable, challenging our core. Today, we're going to use it for a cardio exercise, all right? We're going to shift from left all the way to the other side, okay? This is your side shuffle, but it's a cardio movement,
all
okay?
Right.
So find a point, set it from one side to the next. I'll get out of your way, and you're going to chase it all the way left and all the way right. Your goal here is to not stop. Keep it moving. Yes, there you go. Keep it up, keep it up, keep it up. And breathe. There you go.
Lonely out here.
So your stability ball is pretty cooperative. All you have to do is go left to right for 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Make sure you pick up your feet. All right.
All right.
Now the goal here for stability ball exercises and anything lateral is for you to work on your coordination. All right. So always keep your toes pointed forward, because if you point your toes in this direction, you start to now use muscles you're not supposed to use, all right? So we're trying to keep it nice and even, squat down, and get over to the right, get over to the left, all right? Nice and strong. Number three, now I'm gonna challenge your shoulders a little bit. We're gonna burn those shoulders, all right? So
okay.
Go on your knees, all right? And we're gonna press, all right? Hold that, 30 seconds, and you are going to press that stability ball as fast as you can. 3, 2, 1, go for it. Now, what you can do is challenge yourself by counting how many presses you do in that 30 seconds. Yeah, you have a number, let's say it's 20, right?
Right.
Second round, you try to aim for 21.
Okay.
Third round, you aim for 22. Fourth round, you aim
for about 18.
Yeah. Now, your arms will feel it in the morning.
Well, maybe 9.
3, 2, and 1. So this is your press, very cardio intensive. It will challenge you a bit, all right?
Yeah,
especially
that was
if you
great.
Have one of those stability balls that have sand in it. Oh, you'll feel that your shoulders working, all right? Great way to challenge yourself, all right? So let's stretch it out. Great job.
Yes, please.
I like that. Open and close. Open and close. There you go. Let's open the feet up. Allow your arms to naturally hang, all right? Letting your shoulders get a good stretch. Swing it around as if your arms are stirring some soup. switch directions. Take a nice deep breath. Roll your shoulders up. Roll it back. And you are done.
Wow. Thanks, Sean.
You're
I'm not
very
sure
welcome.
If I should thank you for that, but thank you.
You're very welcome.
Is it a big deal if you are a couch potato? Well, a recent study by the National Institutes of Health argues that physical inactivity and obesity are very big deals. Obesity and physical inactivity increase your risk for a lot of unpleasant things, specifically heart disease, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, and certain cancers. And these risks increase as we get older. So today, get up off the couch and enjoy some physical activity, which is another ageless advantage.
Now it's time for you to ask me questions. Dave asks, what is your opinion about nicotinamide riboside? I know it's a form of vitamin B3, but do you think it can help with aging? It does in rats, but it's still unclear whether it helps humans. So until it's proven, it's probably better to get your B3 for some great foods like oat bran, mushrooms, avocados, legumes, whole grains, peanuts and fruit. So lots of different sources for your B3. What are your thoughts on the benefits of fasting or a reducing diet like the lemonade diet? Well, fasting has so many benefits. It shrinks the stomach, resets the appetite center, and reminds you of the true feeling of hunger, improves insulin sensitivity, it gives the digestive tract a rest, it allows the body to detoxify, it clears the mind, and it mobilizes fat. But you don't want to fast for too long because you'll lose too much water and too much muscle. So be sure to stay well hydrated when you're fasting and limit it to 3 days or less. Here's the next question. Someone called in and said, my husband is 63 and he's lost a lot of muscle. Is it possible to build muscle mass at his age? Yes, it is. As we age, muscle does atrophy, but athletes who keep using their muscles don't lose muscle as they get older. We do have less efficient digestion, we have less stomach acid as we get older, so it's important to increase protein intake after the age of 60. So you might want to step it up from, say, 0.8 milligrams per kilo per day up to 1.2 milligrams per kilo per day and do bodybuilding exercises. If you have a question, you can send it to us by Facebook, text, email, or phone. You can like us on Facebook to become part of our Go Healthy for Good community. Now, let's see what's down in the store today.
Bananas are one of the most popular fruit, and they're actually the fifth most important crop in terms of world trade. Since we're always commenting on how the colour of the fruit and veggies indicates their phytochemical power, you might be surprised to know that white bananas have a load of bioactive compounds like phenols, provitamin A, carotenoids, biogenic amines, and phytosterols. Many of these compounds are antioxidants. Along with that, bananas can boost dopamine levels, a neurotransmitter that makes you happy. Historically, both the fruit and the peel have been used to treat a variety of illnesses and to prevent degenerative diseases. They're as good as a sports drink at restoring carbs, potassium, and other nutrients that get burned up during exercise. And the bonus is that they contain antioxidants, resistant starches, lots of vitamin B6 and fiber. They're almost the perfect fruit. Sweet, nice texture, just the right size. They're versatile, affordable, and almost always available. A big plus is that they come pre-packaged. So when I'm traveling in a developed country, I eat a lot because I'm confident that unlike other fruit, these have never been touched by human hands. This thick, easy to peel skin protects me from a nasty dose of Dally Belly. Bon appetit.
On today's show, we are discussing sex addiction, so this show is not suitable for younger audiences. Our guest is Dr. Neil Nedley, president of Weimar Institute, where the Nedley Depression and Anxiety Recovery Program is currently based. In the last segment, he was explaining the impact of masturbation on the brain. I asked him how strong the link is between pornography and masturbation.
There is a significant link between pornography and masturbation, and there's some evidence that porn and masturbation is linked in 90% of cases of masturbation and the other way around as well. And it happens with both the male and female genders. You know, originally we were studying males in regards to pornography, and it is very harmful for the male brain, but it's also very harmful for the female brain, equally, actually. And so they will get all of the three adverse brain changes as well, the hypofrontality, the increased anxiety, the decrease in pleasure, the dopamine levels going down, and they are also much more likely to get involved in continued hypersexuality and continuing to have it to ramp it up. And so masturbation is also at an all-time high in females in our society. And pornographic use is going up significantly in females as well.
Mm. And our society continues to produce more. So this is going to be a snowballing effect.
It's going to be,
yeah.
Yes.
So how do you address it? You must be able to turn this back.
Absolutely, and that's the good news. Yeah, these are not permanent changes. They're there for quite a while, but we turn it around with what's called a 90-day reboot.
That's quite a while, as you
say. It's quite a while.
That's 3 months. What happens during that 90 days? What do they have to do or not do?
We call it no PMO. And PMO stands for pornography, masturbation, orgasm. Even if they're in a marriage relationship and they've been overdoing it with their marriage partner, even in exclusivity, they're getting into the three adverse brain changes. And we recommend that they educate their partner about this and undergo a 90-day sex fast. You can actually look it up. There's Hollywood stars that are now picking up on this material. Mm-hmm. And if they have bad marriages, if they're having all of these issues, a 90-day sex fast will often solve all of their problems. You won't find, I haven't found an individual or a couple yet who has not tried the 90-day sex fast who didn't think it was one of the greatest things for their marriage and their sex life, by the way, after the 90 days was over with.
Really? And then do you see testosterone levels coming up?
Oh yeah, testosterone levels will come back very nicely. In fact, they'll start to come back when in 7 days you'll get a little spike, and then another 14 days you'll get a greater spike. So testosterone levels come back. The sexual act after this is no longer just about the pursuit of orgasm. If you're doing this too quickly, it becomes a kind of about the pursuit of orgasm. The entire relationship is now very interesting. And also there's much more cuddling that takes place. You know, when people are overdoing it, one of the signs that they're overdoing it is they're no wanting to sit next to each other in the pickup truck. They're, you know, you can see there's two people in it. And, you know, it's about a 3.5-year process for this to really get maximized. So this is when people start dating. They're right next to each other. And as they start overdoing it, you only notice that they're paying attention as far as affection for each other when they're about ready to do this act. And that's one of the signs of really overdoing it. And they will want to be around each other, cuddle, be much more romantically involved, actually, when they do it less.
Wow, because it's very common in marriages. Men want the sex, women want the cuddling and the tenderness.
Exactly.
And so you're saying if the man gets all the sex he wants,
he'll have less cuddling and tenderness. Yeah, very clear. The studies are quite clear on it.
So this is good for marriages, good for...
Yeah. After that, you don't have to go 90 days for the next time again.
So what's the ideal sexual frequency?
The ideal sexual frequency is now known as 1 to 4 times a month, and 7 days for testosterone to spike afterwards. So about once a week is a good goal to go after. Certainly not less than 1 out of every 4 days. 1 out of every 4 days is going to be where you're going to really have the issues all start to come back again.
So if couples are less than 4 days, that 90-day reboot might be good for them.
The 90-day reboot may be good, yeah.
And what advantages are there if they are abstaining for 7 days or having a sexual frequency of 1 to 4 times a month? Are there advantages to their health?
Absolutely, yeah.
Apart from the
physically, they'll be stronger. They'll have much less fatigue. Anxiety will go down. Hopefulness in the future goes up. Yeah, in fact, I'll even say, you know, no matter how bad my life gets, I don't get down over it. I realize a brighter future is out there. Their motivational levels go up, their persistent levels go up, their work ethic will dramatically improve. So, and their social aspect of things. You know, social phobia and anxieties are an all-time high. It's actually higher in people that do too much sex. And when they actually go through this reboot, they'll become much more naturally socially. And they'll actually, if they're not married, they'll be far more attractive for the other sex. In both genders, they'll talk about this. You know, the other sex didn't seem to be very interested in me. Now everyone's interested in dialoguing. They seem to be interested. There's kind of a sexual aura that they have by not doing it frequently.
So they can actually reboot their social life.
Exactly.
Going through this.
Which is very good news. More from Dr. Nedley after the break, so stay with us. We're talking today about sex addiction. This may not be suitable for younger viewers. John's journey with pornography began as an adolescent, but by 18 years of age, he was out of control, just pleasure-seeking, until he was diagnosed with major depression. He attended the Nedley Depression Recovery Program and learned that pornography and depression were linked. To treat one, he had to stop the other. We met him during the EQ Summit at Weimar, where he had once attended the program. Here's the rest of his story. Watch.
So while I was here, it was like an optimal environment. Getting off the drugs was easier with the right people around you. As soon as I went home, my friends were like, "Where have you been? Were you dead?" And I was like, "No, but I found something better." And they thought that was great, but you know, that started to like disassociate me from them. I told them I was up and they were like, "I'm gonna keep with this lifestyle." But in regards to the pornography, it was actually kind of difficult because it was one of those deep-rooted things, because that's kind of where it all started. And so that addiction actually took me times to like I'd fall and then I'd have to like get back up again. And what was encouraging was my parents. They would encourage me to keep, you know, getting back up. And that actually took a while. But, you know, the less and less that I did it, I could actually see the benefits, you know, because as I started looking towards the future as maybe wanting to get married, even wanting a girlfriend, even wanting to just do what was right, I didn't want to be that person that was really taking advantage of women or even like just people that just didn't know, you know? And it kind of really hurt me inside. And so I just kept wanting to start over. You know, the Bible says a righteous man falls 7 times, but that implies that he gets back up again. So I was like, go to the prayer closet, be like, "Lord, I need some help." And so it's been getting better from there. For someone who's using porn, I really think that the only solution is really coming to the Lord. Because the Lord makes these promises, like, if the Son makes you free, then you'll be free indeed. And so, you know, you fall, you mess up, you feel super guilty, right? Well, get back up again. Because the devil, he wants to keep you down, wants to keep you in bondage. That's what like sin is chains. And Jesus said that he came to break your chains, to set you free. And if you claim those promises, if you weep with the Lord, if you plead with the Lord, he'll give you victory.
So true, even in a world where sexually explicit images abound. I asked today's guest, Dr. Nedley, whether sexual addiction is addressed as a routine part of his depression recovery program.
We do, yes. Yeah, it's part of the screening process. And we also address it in the program. And so it's a comprehensive program. And then we educate them about healthy sex versus unhealthy sex. And then we make some recommendations in regards to that.
So tell us, do you have some stories of how people have recovered
yes,
from this?
Yes, many. But there's one, there's always some that are standouts, but this was a 19-year-old college kid who was the son of some very bright people, very successful, but he was failing in his second year of pre-med. And, you know, this guy had gotten A's in high school, but just didn't have it. Anxiety levels were up the roof. He was having to take drugs for it. His family were at their wits' end. What has happened to our son? I mean, he's mentally ill. And he comes to our program, and, of course, we leave no stone unturned, but it became very clear after we did a comprehensive evaluation that although he had some other minor issues, his major issue was, you know, he was masturbating 7-8 times a day. And so when I gave him, you know, the top recommendations, I said, you know, no PMO for 90 days to correct this brain. What? 90 days? I can't even go a day. You know, I don't know how in the world I'm going to do this. And I gave him some suggestions. It is a tough addiction to get over with, but, you know, in the program it's a little easier because we keep them busy with a lot of things that are helping their brain, and they don't have pornographic access, you know, because there's no screens and those type of things. And so they can't go to the usual ways in which they do it. But on top of that, there's a simple solution. We just say, you know, the two-word answer, hands off. And he still wasn't sure about this decision, because what happens is they think this is actually helping them. Because when the anxiety levels go way up, it actually, because of the opioid release, seems to improve it a little bit. And so they're thinking, this is part of my therapy. You know, I've got to do this. Maybe other people don't, but because of my mental illness, I've just got to do this.
So they think they're self-medicating. In fact,
they're making the problem significantly worse. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So later in the week, I gave a whole presentation to the entire group that's very useful, and went into all of the effects. And one of the things that he had was a skin condition that he really wanted to have cleared up. And he had seen dermatologists, and it would come on his face, and he was embarrassed about all of this, and he thought it was adversely affecting maybe even future relationships and those type of things. And so I happened to mention in the lecture about many dermatology problems clearing up within 90 days. And he came up to me afterwards and he says, Dr. Nedley, do you think my skin condition might clear up if I do this 90-day reboot? And I said, you know, I don't know, because you've been to dermatologists. I'm not sure what this is, but it sure might. He says, if it might do that, then I'll go ahead and do it. So that's amazing how
that is. It's how, that motivator,
yeah,
isn't it? Whatever's going to motivate them.
And not only did his skin condition clear up,
wow,
but this guy's focus, attention, energy level cleared up, anxiety gone, and the social phobias that he had disappeared. Within 90 days, this 19-year-old was totally transformed.
And back on track.
And the issue was just, I mean, again, not just, but there was no way he was getting better without addressing that issue.
Right. Wow. Do you have a story about a woman?
I do,
in this situation?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's important to cover both bases here.
It's pretty common in females, too. You know, this was a kind of a sad case in a way, because this girl was raised in an environment where she should have known better, so to speak. You know, she was raised in a religious environment and that type of thing. But her mom was very busy doing mission work and those sorts of things. And she'd be left in her room with a computer. And she learned how to do this and started to do pornography, masturbation frequently. Mother didn't know about it, but then she ends up with, you know, lots of bad relationships. The boys that she ended up with were not good boys. They didn't treat her well. They were only interested in the sex. And as she said, I'm just a terrible chooser of men. when you get this thing where these people are terrible choosers of the opposite partner, very often it's related to this because you have hypofrontality. That's one of the things that happens. So you don't have the ability. It's all lower brain that is helping you to select your mate, which is all limbic system types of things. So if they turn me on romantically, they must be good guys in their mind. Mm. And so by the time she came to us, she was 26 and in a huge mess and had not been able to go to college or be successful. She had tried to go to college but couldn't be successful. All sorts of histories of bad relationships with men, and then even getting abused by men sexually and those type of things after this whole thing started. And on top of it, the highest levels of depression and anxiety. And so she'd go into the room to do this to, quotes, alleviate her anxiety. And so she also was shocked. I remember the look on her face when I said, no PMO, 90 days. And it turns out it's just as tough for females to give this up as it is males.
So all genders, all ages, all ethnicities are affected by the problem of sex addiction. And like any addiction, it controls its victim, distorts beliefs and behaviors, and impairs healthy brain function. However, there is hope. No PMO for 90 days has a proven track record. And as John says, if you fall down, pick yourself up and keep asking God for His power. That's all for me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.